Hello and welcome to the Weekside Podcast. I'm Jenny Brentis. Connor Orr is in New Jersey. We are both self-isolated in our homes. A lot has changed, Connor, since the last time we did this podcast just 1 week ago. The entire world has changed. Everyone is at homes, laying low, hopefully, except for the spring breakers in Florida, for the record, we do not advocate that behavior. But yes, it's crazy how much has changed in 1 week. One of the only things that has not changed, however, is that the NFL forged ahead with business as usual. I was definitely against that move. I know that some people have appreciated the distraction this week. I understand that perspective, but I think logistically it has proved to be a challenge. We see that, you know, as of Thursday afternoon, the Tom Brady deal was kind of hung up a little bit on where he'd get his physical. I think the idea that doctors would be doing physicals for NFL players when they certainly have other pressing healthcare needs doesn't make a lot of sense. I think the precedent set by the NFL, you know, this major entertainment institution in our country, that, hey, it doesn't affect us, it's not our problem. It's a dangerous precedent to move forward with things that are neither essential nor urgent in this current climate, I think is just a pretty bad message. And furthermore, I think there's a lot of people who are under different strains right now. Maybe you have kids who are at home and, you know, trying to keep them on track with their schoolwork. Maybe, as many of us do, you have elderly relatives or older relatives who you want to make sure are taking the proper precautions. I mean, I spent Sunday afternoon talking my dad out of going to a dental cleaning on Monday morning. So, you know, I think there's just a lot of people who have priorities elsewhere that you want to make sure your families are taken care of. You want to be actively engaged with what behaviors you should be doing. And people have still been going in. You know, they said everything can be done virtually, but there have been teams where people have felt like they've had to go to the office because there was work to do. I've also heard that there were teams where they cut off the key access so that people couldn't go in, which I think is a really smart thing to do, and was glad to hear that step. But just feels like both logistically and in the message that it sends, it's kind of been a very surreal week to see the NFL proceeding like nothing is going on in the world, and then the rest of the world being pressured and strained in numerous ways.
Yeah, it's to me, I mean, these moments always show true colors, for better or worse. You know, I was saying to someone the other day that was getting married that, like, a wedding reveals the best and worst in people that you might not expect. And I think that's true in a global sense when something really rattling happens, like a pandemic or like a terrorist attack or something like that. But the NFL has just appeared so aloof and during this process. And I guess that they can wave the flag, like you said, of, well, we made you think of Tom Brady for 5 minutes instead of, you know, someone coughing on you and getting you sick. And, you know, I just think that the optics are horrendous. I mean, we're having all these people signing giant contracts at a time when, you know, we're all worried about health, the cost of healthcare, and, you know, they might need to pass a stimulus bill just to get people through this, and you know, sending checks. And so, I don't know. I mean, I just thought it was something that could have waited. It could have been a nice sort of breath of fresh air at the end of this rope. And I don't know. I just, why couldn't the NFL have shut down like a lot of other businesses and then turned themselves into a vehicle for doing good? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a distillery by my house that makes vodka. And, you know, these places aren't flush with cash. They're not, you know, killing it. They don't have national distribution. But what did they do? People weren't coming because they're afraid to go out. So they shut it down and they used the alcohol that they had stored to make hand sanitizer, you know. And I'm not saying that the NFL has all these chemicals lying around, but they have more money than anyone knows what to do with. And, you know, buy some masks, you know, I don't know, like, do something. And I don't know. It just feels like instead it's like, nope, we're the distraction. But I don't think it's making a lot of people feel really good right now.
Yeah. And it took them so long to issue any guidelines in terms of, you know, draft visits or not letting players into the facility for 2 weeks and pausing the offseason program. They did make those steps, but it was almost like they were in a position where they waited as long as they possibly could to take those actions rather than saying, hey, we can be a leader and making sure people take this seriously and making sure that we're taking the necessary steps to protect the people that work for us. We've seen that sports was something of a wake-up call for the country. Once NBA games and once college basketball games were being canceled, then I think people started to say, wow, this is pretty serious. It was the sports world that kind of was the signal for that. The NFL, they're not in their season right now, but instead of using that as a benefit and saying any changes we make will come at a lower cost, they just decided that they would forge ahead. And I wrote that on Sunday night. I heard from people on several teams. I heard from a coach. I heard from two people in front offices. I heard from some agents who all said that they felt it was irresponsible. It was tone deaf and they felt it was entitled, and that the NFL kind of operates as it always has, is that we're bigger than anything else. We're bigger than a pandemic. And then I did hear some concerns of people who felt like they were expected to go in and they really didn't want to. It's crazy they went ahead with it, but here we are, Connor, and now we are on a NFL podcast, and a lot happened in the NFL this week. So we're just going to do our best to sift through some of the moves while saying that we wish we were doing this podcast, you know, in May instead.
Yeah, this is we hope that you can derive some fun from this. You know, we'll get to some football, but let's just let it be known that it's under protest.
Yes, exactly.
Begrudgingly.
Begrudgingly. All right. So Connor has written the news topics. The quarantine has not lessened your flair for puns and a turn of phrase, Connor. So we're really blessed to have this. So,
well, thank you.
I'll start with news topic number one because I'm really excited to read the last line of this. The extremely robust market for Tom Brady resulted in the quarterback signing with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Brady will leave New England after 20 years, and if you believe owner Robert Kraft, it was the quarterback's desire to separate. What do you make of the Tampa Bay phenomenon?
Also, extremely robust was meant to be in like very visible air quotes, like
yes.
Extremely robust.
Should have made that clear when I read it, because it certainly wasn't. This wasn't quite what it was hyped up to be, is what you're getting at with the air quotes there.
I don't think so. I mean,
I don't think so either.
You know, we were all as a staff reporting on this during the week and trying to figure out, you know, I mean, I think we've learned a lesson from the 2007 Phillies that there can always be a mystery team lurking in the shadows. And we were all kind of digging around and doing our due diligence. And I don't think we found a mystery team lurking in the shadows. I think it was the Buccaneers. You know, I think that they were the team that had everything lined up and they want the attention and they want to be able to charge more for season tickets, which they're going to do. And they want, all of the trappings that come with signing Tom Brady, and they did it. And, you know, I think we're seeing that kind of slow drag in the contractual process right now as they try to figure everything out. That's sort of where we are as we're recording this on Thursday. But this did not seem like there was another team beaten down the door. I could be wrong, but it didn't feel like that to me.
There was more intrigue with the Nnamdi Asamoah sweepstakes in 2011. You know, I kept waiting for Team X. We covered that situation live, and it was rumored to be the Cowboys, the Jets, maybe one other. I don't know. But we were covering the Jets at the time, so we were like waiting and everything was on hold. And then he signed with the Eagles, the mystery Team X. But there was no mystery Team X. And I mean, I think it does speak to some of the reasons why. I think it speaks to the fact that there were some concerns later in the season that is this the beginning of the, are we seeing the signs that Brady is, you know, just going to continue to be less and less of the player that he used to be. I mean, I think one thing you heard from teams around the league was that the accuracy did not seem like it was what it used to be. And of course, he can overcome that with his mind and his knowledge of the game. Certainly, he has a quick release and always has. So the issues that we saw with, say, Phillip Rivers in Los Angeles last season when the offensive line was had injuries and was kind of diminished there would not have been a concern with Brady because he can get the ball out fast, and that's always been a hallmark of his game. But yes, it wasn't this transformative process, I think, that if you'd said, hey, Tom Brady hits the market, it's going to do this intense flurry. It wasn't that.
Yeah, and I remember back when he readjusted his contract, I reached out to a couple agents, former general managers, and I posed them all the same question, which was, what would you offer Tom Brady on the open market? And everybody, without hesitation, was in the $35 to $40 million a year range. They said, that's what makes sense. That's what he deserves. That's what he's going to want. And it ended up coming in under that, you know, and that was just sort of a personal barometer for me. But I for sure thought that, I don't know, that there was going to be a little bit more interest. We had talked on this podcast about John Gruden doing something crazy, and that felt very on brand for him. But instead, like, everybody else has just sort of dug in and has had a really pragmatic sort of off season when it comes to all the quarterback stuff for the most part.
Yeah, I think pragmatic is a good way to look at it. You know, I think certainly last season, the way the season ended for Brady, and there was of course this raging debate of, is it the weapons or is it Brady himself? But I think enough people kind of saw some signs where, depending on your situation, it's a little bit of a gamble, right? Do you want to bring in Brady and, you know, he's going to turn 43 at the start of training camp, and do you want to bank on the fact that he will play at a high level for the full season in a new offense? And I think that is a bigger gamble than perhaps we thought it might have been a year ago.
This whole thing is a giant gamble. And I think that this is going to sound crazier than it is, and I'm not diminishing anything that Tom Brady has done throughout his career, but what makes us think that he is going to be markedly different from a lot of the great Patriots who have come in, flourished there, and then went elsewhere and not had as much success? And I know he's different. I know he's wired different. I know he's unquestionably one of the two or three greatest players in the history of football. But, I mean, you talk to all these other Patriots who sing Bill Belichick's praises, Josh McDaniels, they're so well prepared. And that's why they make the playoffs and the Super Bowl every year. They're just better prepared than any other group of players in football and in NFL history. And I don't know, you can't get that anywhere else. And it doesn't matter how good you are. I just think that you don't get the answers to the test when you go to Tampa Bay. Instead, it's kind of more on your own personal skill set. I don't know. I just, to me, it would scare me to death. I mean, it's just like, it's like anyone else. Like, why did Kyle Van Noy get so much better when he went to New England, or Jamie Collins, and then he wasn't good in Cleveland, and, you know, all these other people. Danny Shelton finally came alive, and now they're all signing contracts elsewhere. And it's like, you know, I don't know, what am I missing that this keeps happening? And is Tom Brady resistant to that? I don't think he is.
Yeah, and he wasn't resistant to the ending of his career being the same as we see with stars who play in New England under Bill Belichick, right? It's them, there's a parting of the ways, however exactly it comes about, before the player is ready to end his career. And we saw that again. And if Bill had really wanted Brady, perhaps, you know, if he had gone further to retain Brady, perhaps the outcome would have been different. But 2 years ago, you know, we had the shocking Garoppolo trade. They got one more Super Bowl and two seasons out of Brady. And now we saw the departure that perhaps we expected a year or two ago. So maybe it's a year or two later than we initially expected. But certainly in Brady's mind, you know, he still has a lot. He wants to play to 45. He's reiterated that. And he's going to do that somewhere else besides New England.
You just start imagining it. And by the way, we talked about optics at the top of the show. Here are the Jets and the Giants deferring people's PSL payments to help them get through coronavirus, which I thought was a thoughtful thing to do. And then here's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers jacking up their season ticket prices with everybody waiting in line to see Tampa Bay. Good luck selling those things in November when the team is 4 and 5, you know. And
really, yeah, really helping people get through the crisis here.
Yeah, unbelievable. I just don't know. I think that this is going to be, I don't know. Like, I'm going to get to this a little bit later in the Oracle, but, like, I feel like people are expecting this to be like LeBron to Miami, and it's going to be this whole new culture and stuff that's created down there. It's not going to be. You know what it's going to be? It's going to be a bunch of tame investment bankers that are buying these tickets and then showing up if the team is 4-0 to take clients there, and then they, you know, buy their $30 sandwich and they watch half the game and then leave. It's not going to improve the atmosphere. It might improve the economics of the situation momentarily, but I don't think that this is a new era in Buccaneer football or anything like that. I think this is just, you know, this is a cash grab a little bit.
Well, the business was certainly a factor for any team considering Brady, right? You know, I think for the Chargers, it would be silly to say it wasn't a factor as they move into a new stadium and, have been having trouble selling. So, certainly a factor in LA, certainly a factor for the Buccaneers. And I think the big question is now, yeah, how much does it help the football? And is Brady who up to the challenge of thriving outside New England for the first time in his career at age 43?
All right, I'm already fired up. So this is a good landing spot for the rest of my frustration. Texans head coach and general manager and chief football czar and head of everything, Bill O'Brien, traded franchise wideout DeAndre Hopkins to the Cardinals for a series of non-first-round picks and running back David Johnson. This just hours before the Vikings got a much bigger bounty for Stephon Diggs. Jenny, is this one of the worst trades in recent memory, or is it simply one of the worst trades of all time?
Only two choices. They're both bad.
Yeah,
this was a stunner. And then we saw some additional context that was troubling come out from Michael Irvin, who said that he had talked to Hopkins, who shared an account of a rift with Bill O'Brien. Then Hopkins said it was blown out of proportion. But a lot of the things that were mentioned were pretty troubling. I mean, I think some comments that were disrespectful at best and had, you know, racist undertones at worst.
Yeah, if what Michael Irvin said is true, like I'm surprised that is not. I mean, the league's plate is full. I mean, certainly the world's plate is full. But like, you know, that's something to me that merits looking into. You know, there's been allegations surrounding the Texans organization prior to this. You know,
right.
Of a similar nature and a similar tone. So I don't know. I mean, if that's true and that's really how you're making your decisions as a head coach, then, you know, you deserve to have a bad team and a bad roster. And I just don't see any possible way this makes your team better. I think that DeAndre Hopkins was one of the biggest factors in Deshaun Watson becoming the quarterback that he was, because he keeps drives alive. And while his I was looking at his expected catch percentage over average before the show, and it was actually like -0.6 this year. So he did not have his best season. But historically, during this all-pro run, he has been phenomenal with bad quarterback after bad quarterback after bad quarterback. And then when Deshaun Watson was a rookie, he was making him look so much better than I think he was at the time. And then Deshaun grew into his own and can fill his own shoes now and is certainly one of the top 10 players at his position in football. But so much of that, I think, was because of how good DeAndre Hopkins was.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such an important part of a quarterback's development to have that top receiver. And it just, the exchange doesn't make sense here. And that's why I think when you have someone adding other context to what was behind the move, that in your ears really perk up, because on paper, as just strictly a football move, you're like, what the heck is going on? And then you hear reports, okay, there was a rift between the two of them. And so other motivations may have played a factor in this move. And that makes it even worse that if you don't have, you know, if you're trading away a top player that's essential in your quarterback's development because your relationship with him is frayed for a player that has been, by all accounts, like, is a good teammate. I mean, he's obviously great on the field. Like, we haven't heard anything bad about DeAndre Hopkins. So I think from that perspective, it makes this head-scratching move just a really even worse one. I don't know, Connor. What word am I looking for?
I don't know. I referred to it as toxic confidence because I think
that's good.
I think that above and beyond, let's say that Michael Irvin was speaking out of turn, or you know, maybe had his sources crossed up, which you know, kind of happened during the Tom Brady to Dallas thing. So let's not pretend that Michael Irvin is Bob Woodward here either. But the three-pronged defense, if you asked around, was that the Texans felt that, okay, this is a historically deep wide receiver class. The cap hits for Johnson and Hopkins were similar, so it was kind of like an NBA trade almost, where you just plug and play, and it's position for need, position for need. And, you know, that you weren't going to sign DeAndre Hopkins to a long-term contract, or at least you didn't want to. But so many of these are the problems that Bill O'Brien created for himself in the first place. You weren't going to sign DeAndre Hopkins to a long-term deal because you have to pay Laremy Tunsil. And you have to pay Laremy Tunsil because you drafted two tackles in the first round the year before that you didn't like and that aren't developing the way that you like. And I don't know. I just think that this whole thing, I'm amazed that they made it as far as they did last year, A. And B, I don't see how this is set up for a sustainable, successful future.
Yeah, and the idea of a deep wide receiver class, I understand that. But at that position specifically, that one has seemed to be a very difficult one to project into the NFL, at least for initial success, right? I mean, we saw N'Keal Harry with the Patriots struggle last year. And there are just so many cases where it takes players a while to, you know, contribute in a meaningful way at that position. Certainly, there are notable exceptions to that. And, you know, maybe with the change in style in NFL offenses, maybe the jump at a lot of positions is not as extreme as it once was. But I think you're still gambling, and you're basically saying we have this known commodity that has an excellent relationship with our quarterback and is a top five receiver in the NFL. We're going to get a running back and draft a receiver. I just am not sure who would take that exchange.
No, and a running back that, you know, while maybe just fell out of fashion in the air raid hybrid offense that is being run in Arizona, has not come close to touching the success that he had early in his career with the Cardinals. I don't know. I just think this whole thing is a bad idea. I think it's, you know, if I'm Deshaun Watson, I'm definitely upset. I don't know. I just, I don't know. And then the Stephon Diggs trade just made it look so much worse. I mean, right. They got the first round. The Vikings got the first round pick out, and we'll get to that. We'll get to that trade a little bit later. But that was a case where someone clearly was a problem and wanted to leave. But I don't know. There was just no indication that that was the case with DeAndre Hopkins. I don't know. But good for you, DeAndre Hopkins. I think that that is going to be a fun offense to play in. It's going to be a fun offense to watch. Seeing him paired with Larry Fitzgerald, Kyler Murray, Cliff Kingsbury. I don't know. All of a sudden, the NFC West kind of seems a little more fun than it did a week ago.
Which is saying something, because the NFC West was exciting last year. So yeah. Now you're adding a fourth team to the mix.
Yeah, absolutely.
A fourth interesting team to the mix.
Yeah.
All right, news topic number three. The Patriots and the Chargers are among the teams that are theoretically still hanging out and gauging the quarterback market. With names like Cam Newton, Jameis Winston on the market, as well as Andy Dalton via trade, how do we think the unsettled quarterback situations will end up across the league? I believe the Chargers will just stand pat with Tyrod Taylor. I don't think they'll sign Newton. I think they like Tyrod, and I think they'll draft someone. I think for them, you know, the choices were really two very different paths, right? You sign Brady and you know, don't start kind of a, you know, the drafting and developing process of a young guy. Or, I mean, maybe you drafted someone anyway, but you wouldn't draft someone in the first round in that case, right, this year. So, yeah, you go the route of signing Brady and developing an offense for him, or you go the route of Tyrod and planning to draft someone and develop. Like, you figure at this point, the Chargers probably haven't made any progress on an offensive playbook until the Brady situation was resolved, because like you couldn't pick two paths that were more different. So while I'm sure they were disappointed not to land him, I imagine there was also a sense of, relief. Now it's settled. They know the answer and they'll move forward. And certainly at six, they're in position to draft one of the top passers. Now, if they want Tua, they probably have to move up for him. There have certainly been reports that the Dolphins and the Chargers are the two most interested in Tua. So we'll see how that works out. But as far as the Chargers, that's how I see their situation resolving. What do you think about the Patriots, Connor?
I don't know. You did a great piece for SI.com, which people should read about the potential future of the Patriots. I like the theory that they're just going to flat out tank and then end up with Trevor Lawrence next year and then just start another 20-year run of Belichickian dynasty until he's in his 90s. That's attractive to me, that theory.
That was not my theory. I can't take
that was not
for
your
that.
Theory. No, no,
I
that, no.
Well, I can't take credit for that. So,
but I think that, you know, with you at the top of your list, and I don't know if it was numbered specifically to be like this one is the most likely or the least likely, but it seems to have jibed with a lot of people that are saying like, hey, maybe it just might be Jarrett Stidham, right? Like it like that could end up being the deal. I mean, the Patriots are making some cap clearing measures of late. I'm sure that they might end up discarding a few more pieces as we get further down the road here, but I don't know, maybe they just like him and maybe they just want to play him.
Yeah, it's so hard to make any projections about what we know Jarrett Stidham to be at this point, and clearly they have all of that information. I mean, we saw him throw what, 4 or 5 passes in games last year. One of course was a pick six, not a great situation. They had to put Brady back in at the end of a blowout, but they've seen him for a year. They have a sense of if he's up to the task or not. It's very difficult to comment from the outside without having a meaningful sample size to judge off of, other than his college, you know, which again, we always make projections from college to pros. But I think that's a potential route. I mean, I thought the Andy Dalton trade would also potentially make sense. Belichick in his history has not drafted quarterbacks high. In all of his drafts, I think wrote it 25 with the Browns and the Patriots. He's never drafted a passer in the top 60, I believe, is what I had in there. Garoppolo at 62 was the highest, which showed you what he thought of Garoppolo. So it you know, where they're picking in the 20s, I believe it's 22, you're not going to get the top three passers. So if you believe the top three to be Burrow to Jordan Love, right? So is there someone you like at 22? Do you get someone in a middle round? I don't know, a lot of options. But yeah, it doesn't seem like you can rule out that Stidham would be the week one starter for New England.
I don't know. You make a good point about not jumping to conclusions, but here's the one thing that terrifies me almost as much as something apparently just terrified my dog, if you guys heard that on the microphone. Perhaps there was a could have been a diaper delivery, you know. We're still grinding out here, you know. He doesn't like the diaper delivery guy. I would say that the one thing that tangibly would scare me about that is it, as you get closer to week one, there is going to be a very real feeling that, hey, I am replacing Tom Brady. And I think that that is easier for someone like Andy Dalton to come in and handle with where he was in his career and where he wants to go in his career than someone who is a rookie. You know, that is a gigantic emotional weight, I would say. And that's something that I don't know if Bill Belichick would think about, because he's so used to being this person who just exchanges things as replaceable parts, that like, are you considering the fact that like you've created this gigantic thing that this poor young guy has to live up to now?
Yeah, I think the Dalton fit makes sense for that reason. Connor is, he was a 9-year starter in Cincinnati. He got banged a lot, right? You know, wasn't successful in the playoffs and, you know, never could get the Bengals over the hump. But he's got a ton of experience. He seemed unfazed by criticism. Like, that seems like an ideal makeup to drop into that role. I think that one still makes a lot of sense. I guess I'm not too surprised, perhaps, that the Dalton move hasn't happened. I mean, I think the options were to trade or release, right? And I could see team saying, all right, we'll just kind of hang on until you release, and then we don't have to give up anything for him.
Yeah, everything's going to be delayed anyway, right?
Yeah, so, yeah.
You know, and maybe Belichick is already just drawing up his Andy Dalton plays. He's already ready. Everybody's just raring to go. Oh, yeah. Prepare.
You mentioned Cam on this list, too, as one of the players that's still out there. And it's interesting because you have a situation now where you have a quarterback who's had three surgeries in the last few years and is coming off a surgery in December, and a team can't get him in to examine him, have their medical staff look at him. So do you feel comfortable moving forward and making a move on Cam when you can't get a physical by your own people? And I think that is, he's in a tough spot, I think, given the restrictions right now with travel and with, you know, teams not being, or players not being able to take visits to teams.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I don't know. I don't know if this sounds crazy, but if I'm a GM, I'm signing him now and I'm saying, I don't care how you feel right now. You can take the year if you need to take the year. I would love to see what he could do if his body really had a chance to regenerate, you know, and heal for once in his career, you know, and really just get healthy, because there's still things that he can do that no other quarterback can do in the NFL. And, you know, I don't know. That would be a tough thing to make materialize under the salary cap. I understand that. But if you were to have his blessing and work something out, I mean, I don't know. I would be interested. I mean, I still think he's a great player, and I think that he fits the modern game so much better. You know, and if someone just kind of had some imagination with him, I think his career in Carolina would have gone a lot differently or a lot better than it did too.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's an interesting idea. Definitely, he seems to be the one who is potentially the most hurt by the current restrictions and the league deciding to go forward with free agency amid the pandemic. All right, Connor, we have two more topics, right? Well, two sides of the same coin.
Yes. I'll ask you first, Jenny. What was your favorite move, signing, transaction of free agency wave one so far?
I liked the Bears trade for Nick Foles.
Me too.
They gave up a compensatory fourth round pick for a guy who legitimately will challenge and likely will beat out Mitchell Trubisky. I mean, I think this is great. Matt Nagy coached Foles in Kansas City and several years ago in Philadelphia, clearly knows him well, which we see with, you know, moves all the time, right? They bring in players they know. But the difference versus bringing in Chase Daniel is that Chase Daniel was like supposed to be the Mark Brunell type backup to,
yes,
Mark Sanchez.
Yep.
Right? Like the veteran that would help teach him the offense and mentor him and not challenge him in any meaningful way. And so Nick Foles is definitely different from that. I'm a little surprised, I have to say, Connor. Like, I know reports came out around the combine that the Jaguars were ready to move forward with Minshew and trade Foles. I'm just a little surprised that you wouldn't keep both for one more year. I don't know. They made a big financial commitment to Foles, and you still don't know what Minshew's going to become. So I don't know. I guess I was a little surprised by that.
I was too. I mean, unless their plan is to bundle all the things that they're stockpiling to move up and to get a quarterback if they love one, and maybe that they're a surprise sort of outlier in this situation. I don't know what the plan is there, and I don't know if, you know, are you going to let that group orchestrate another, you know, tanking? I mean, you know, there's been kind of that leadership in place there since 2013, the first time they really went down and then came up on that slight kind of ascension up to the AFC Championship game. Do you let them do that again and sell off all these pieces and accumulate these future assets and then spend all that? I don't know. I mean, I think that's going to be interesting to me. But I agree with you. I love this trade. And, you know, Ryan Pace has been crushed, deservedly so, since 2017 for picking Trubisky over Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. But the reality of the situation is there's nothing you can do to change that now, right? And I was talking to someone recently who made a good point that, you know, there's all these studies done on who is the best selector of players in the NFL, who is better than anybody else at picking players in the draft. And it's funny because it's not scientifically significant. There's no real difference. Like, you were just as likely to get as many good players if you pick by their birthday as you do by general manager, right? So it's a crapshoot. You make mistakes. And I think that the true, like, fallacy there is then not admitting it and then just burying yourself with the quarterback because of your ego. This is him, and maybe he won't come out and say this, but this is him saying, hey, I made a mistake, and while there's still a little bit of life left on this roster, I'm going to do whatever I can to fix it. You know, this is me admitting I'm wrong, and a lot of people don't admit that they're wrong.
Yeah, I agree with you, Connor, because I think that's the difference with the Patriots, right? It's not that the Patriots draft significantly better, because they really don't. They've had a ton of misses, but they admit their mistakes, they move on, and they find other ways to fix those misses. So yeah, this was a great way to fix it. I mean, it's a small cost to bring in a former Super Bowl MVP that your head coach believes, you know, can win games for them if he wins out the competition. And okay, what's the other scenario? Maybe he challenges Trubisky and Trubisky figures things out and, you know, taps into the talent and all the reasons that they drafted him. So yeah, I think this was a great move for the Bears. I think it was a great fit. It was totally reasonable price. And I think Foles is coming there. You know, last year didn't work out the way he wanted to in Jacksonville, and he was motivated a year ago to go somewhere and be the starter and be the guy, and he's bringing all of those same motivations with him to Chicago as well.
Yeah, I mean, we just remember last year there was that game where, you know, it was towards the end of the season, and there was like that critical moment where Mitch Trubisky, I guess, had that had the injury that, but really Matt Nagy was pulling him aside and whispering in his ear, and then Chase Daniel came in for the pivotal last two drives. You had to have somebody better to come off the bench in that moment, or you had to have Mitch on the sidelines taking that in. I mean, you can't put yourself in that position again. And I don't know. I mean, I'm torn. I mean, I give Pace a lot of credit for this move, but also, like, I'm worried. It's like, is he towing the line between admitting a mistake and just spending this into oblivion because he knows that he might be in a little bit of trouble, you know? And what is the right side of that fine line? Because we've seen it work out, right, with Les Snead, where, you know, that's a person who may have been in some trouble at some point and then signed everybody in free agency, and it worked out, and they made the Super Bowl, and now his, you know, situation is much more secure than it was maybe heading into the Sean McVay era. But, you know, with Ryan Pace, it's like, okay, you know, are you doing this because you know you made a mistake, or are you just grasping at straws? I mean, you know, 5 years, $70 million for Robert Quinn, is that a sign of maybe some trouble spending or some nervous, anxious spending?
All right, Connor, what was your favorite move?
My favorite move was Javon Hargreave, I think. Right. I think that he was one of my favorite players in free agency. And I think that he opens up a lot of things for the Philadelphia's better pass rushers and, you know, interior rushers, Fletcher Cox, all those guys. He's just a lot of fun to watch. I don't know. You just have those people that you enjoy, I think. So I'm maybe a little biased here, but someone who can just, you know, destroy centers and then also get out and make some tackles in open space. But just, I think, someone who can unlock a lot of the things that the Eagles need unlocked up front. They've been kind of searching and poking around at that position for a while now, and I think that they got the best player on the market there for not a ton. I mean, I don't think that was a super aggressive contract either. I think it was a smart signing.
And they made some other interesting moves, Darius Slay as well. So yeah, always interesting to see the direction they go in. All right, on the flip side, Connor, the worst moves in free agency.
I'm going to get...
I was just going to say, we already discussed one, which was the Hopkins trade. But yeah, we're going to do the worst non-Hopkins trade.
Yeah, I'm going to get killed for this, and it's fine. I'm ready to accept it. Just another day of me getting banged. It's I'm used to it. I hated the Stephon Diggs trade for the Bills. I thought that was a little bit crazy because you're inheriting somebody who was extremely unhappy with the target share in Minnesota with a really good, super accurate quarterback. And you're sending him to Buffalo, where maybe you're saying that Josh Allen is a quarterback on the rise, but I don't think that Josh Allen is going to be able to get Diggs the ball nearly enough to make him happier than he was in Minnesota. And I think that the Bills actually had some stuff going offensively that didn't require them to go out and spend all these picks to just get someone like Stephon Diggs. I don't know. It wasn't a move that sat completely well with me.
One thing that I thought about seeing that move was, like, were they in the mix for Hopkins? And if so, I mean, obviously they were willing to give a lot more. So I'm just interested to see, if they had tried for Hopkins, right?
Yeah, like, if, I mean, that's where having a GM helps, right? I mean, a GM is going to remember that they were trying to get all in for Antonio Brown back during when that whole thing happened, that their desperation for a wide receiver hasn't waned at all during that period of time. And I mean, how do you not make that phone call? And optically, wouldn't you much rather send a player up there than to send him with Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury in an offense that's probably going to be a top 10 yardage points offense in the NFL this year?
Well, I guess you're sending him out of the conference,
true,
right? So that's probably, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. That was like the immediate reaction was like, were there conversations there? And to our earlier point, Diggs was openly and made a point of being openly disgruntled and is not as good of a receiver as Hopkins is. So it just made the whole Hopkins trade seem more absurd. But yes, I agree with you, Connor. I think you made some good points. You know, you want to put all these weapons around Allen, but you still have the same problems with Allen you did even if he didn't have as many weapons.
The good news is, I mean, I guess if you're the Bills, right, is that, you know, at least you're doing everything you can. You can't say that you weren't trying to elevate your starting quarterback, and you have an excuse, I think, to move on then after this year if you don't see the progress that you wanted. And you could say, well, you know, we gave him a number one wide receiver, we gave him a running game, we gave him a great defense, and, you know, it's just it's time to part ways.
Mm-hmm.
What's your worst move?
I'm not a fan of the Austin Hooper signing. I mean, okay, breaking news, Browns overspend in free agency. You could say this every year, but it's a lot of money, but I guess reportedly about $11 million per year for a tight end that I would consider not at the top. I mean, he's probably better than mediocre, but over his career highs last year, 6 touchdowns, 787 yards. I see that Kevin Stefanski would want a player like Hooper. He likes to play a lot of 12 personnel. He would fit well in the scheme. So from that sense, I understand it. I just think it's grossly overpaying for a player that is not somebody that you're like worried about on every play, right? It just seems like a big amount of money if you're not spending on like a Kelsey or a Kittle or what Gronkowski used to be, right? That's where I'm a little bit struggling with that. I think there's the tight ends that are the ones that are constant threats in every play, and I don't see Hooper falling into that category.
Yeah, I mean, we saw the Falcons then replace him with Hayden Hurst, which I think would have been a sensible alternative there. You know, calling someone like the Ravens, who are overloaded at the tight end position and had a lot of people that they liked. But I think that also, and, you know, maybe this class doesn't necessarily bear it out, but look around the league, and this is a position that is becoming trendier. I think guys are shifting to that model of that, like, movement tight end position. And I think that colleges are going to start pumping these guys out a lot with a lot more regularity than in the past, where we've seen after the advent of Rob Gronkowski a lot more, you know, no one will ever be Rob Gronkowski, but at least something similar to Rob Gronkowski or Rob Gronkowski light after not seeing anything like that for a decade, right? And I just don't think they're that difficult to find anymore, and I'd rather maybe put that on my scout shoulders and get, you know, 4 years of a cost-controlled contract than to immediately go out and spend $11 million a year on a tight end. Now, will that look like, not a bargain, will it look less egregious once Kittle signs this deal and I think that the gap closes between receivers and tight ends? Possibly, but I still don't think it looks good. I totally agree.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Connor, now on to our favorite part of the show, the Oracle.
So I alluded to this at the top a little bit, and I think that it's just so, and before I start, I'm saying I'm not begrudging the reporting here. I think that, you know, Adam Schefter is as plugged in as anybody, and what he's hearing is probably accurate, right? That he tweeted Thursday morning when we were, before we recorded this podcast, that, you know, so many people now are calling the Buccaneers to want to play with Tom Brady and to be a part of this, and it's going to be LeBron part two, and the, you know, all this stuff is going to be happening in Tampa Bay. I could not disbelieve that more. I don't think that there's any possible way. If you were a player and you wanted to, you were a wide receiver or a running back and you wanted to play in an all-star team, you would get your agent to trade you to the Chiefs or I don't know, any other, you know, I just don't see the, you know, outside of the star power of Tom Brady, I don't see the attraction here of, you know, players actively wanting to leave their current teams to go play here.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that was somewhat odd. And I think Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk, who then quote tweeted it by saying, basically a message in here that the Buccaneers need to just finalize the contract. I think that was probably a smart read of that. It's just like one of those weird reports that's this kind of like, you know, that it's out there for some kind of purpose. So yeah, that one just kind of, it kind of came across a little funny, I would say.
Like the first thing I thought of when I saw that tweet was who, right? Who is coming down there? Who wants to come down there and play? Like, is Calvin Johnson coming out of retirement? No. I don't even know if you'd want him to at this point. What is the person that this is kind of alluding to? I mean,
that's exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, right. I don't know. I don't see, and you can't create a dream team in football. We've tried it. You know, I think a million people have tried it. Now, I mean, is it going to look, you know, ridiculous if, let's say I'm saying this and then in 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, whenever everything gets back to normal, Antonio Brown and Josh Gordon both go down and play in Tampa Bay? That's different. That's not the same thing. Those are two people who don't have opportunities elsewhere or have limited opportunities elsewhere and some familiarity with Tom Brady that are going to go play there. That's different than, I don't know, Sammy Watkins saying, I'm not re-signing here because I need to go down to Tampa Bay and play with Tom Brady.
Right. It's also weird timing because a lot of free agency has already happened, right? So by saying this on Thursday morning, 3 days after the negotiating period opened and began, is just a little bit strange. So, yeah, just a little odd. So
strange is a good way to put it, Jenny.
Yeah, just a little odd.
What about the VC? What are we all agreeing on? Because, man, I could use just the warm and fuzzies here amid the craziness.
I think this is a very warm and fuzzy VC, Connor. We've seen a lot of players step up and announce that they were donating funds to local food banks, which I think was a great use of this time. And the latest, I think, were Jared Goff and Andrew Whitworth for the Los Angeles Food Bank. J.J. Watt and his wife, professional soccer player Kalia Ojai, also donated to the Houston Food Bank. I think Patrick Mahomes. And I feel like food banks right now are really important. A lot of us are, our main concern is going out and hoarding supplies at the grocery store. But there are a lot of people who rely on schools for breakfasts and lunches. And we're really seeing a lot of people need to bridge that gap. So I think that's a really great use of resources at this point in time. You know, you were talking earlier about the league's response to this has been disappointing, and I really think that's true. But, you know, individual players doing things like that, I think, has been one of the bright spots of this week.
Yeah, big pop to any of the players who were doing that. Big pop to my alma mater, Abington Heights High School, during the closure, has kept breakfast and lunch service open. No questions asked. You just roll by, and you can get two bags, one for breakfast and one for lunch. So if you need food for the day, you know, I think that's good. You know, that's the thing that we've seen. You know, we said this at the top of the show, the flooding in Houston, anything that is just a crazy, hard to, impossible to prepare for, monumental thing, we do see the good, you know, and I think that it's important, you know, as crazy and as scary as it is during these times, to remind ourselves that, you know, yes, there is someone at the supermarket elbowing you for toilet paper, but there is also someone very willing to look out for you or each other, or, you know. And I think that's the important thing to focus on, is that there's good people and good things still out there.
Yeah, I think we're leaving some off the list too. I think I remember reading Russell Wilson and Sierra donated.
Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, okay. So a lot of people trying to fill in the food gap. And another thing, like, I've been getting, like, I got a couple emails from, like, restaurants that I've been to. So I guess I was on their email listserv. But, like, one of my favorites in the neighborhood was the Mermaid Inn. So I bought a gift card the other day, but they sent an email yesterday that they created, like, an employee assistance fund, which, you know, I think is a nice thing. Obviously, restaurants in New York, like, the profit margin is very small as it is. And so I think they're struggling in these times. So that was a nice way, I thought, to get funds for, like, the dishwashers and the servers and the cooks and people who are out of work now. So there have been some nice bright spots amid all the craziness, Connor.
Yeah, definitely. And we hope this was too. I mean, you know, it's if it got you through, you know, 51 minutes of a day, then hopefully, you know, we did our jobs a little bit. Just know that, you know, we're all out here, you know, we're all in this together, and do something good for somebody today. You know, I think that's really what, you know, call someone, check up on someone, anything that you could think of that might make a positive difference. Because you never know who's having, you know, a tougher day in this. And, you know, we're still very early in the process.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us. Thanks for spending an hour of your quarantined life with us today. The MMQB Weekside Podcast is me, Jenny Rentis, and Connor Orr. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Moravik is emeritus executive director of the MMQB. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.